$741. One episode of Miami Vice costs more to produce than the entire annual budget of the real Miami Vice squad. But that reflected a kind of a sillier time, and now it's become more serious in some ways.
Rick MacArthur, I want to thank you for being with us. Congratulations on 25 years of the Harper's Index. That does it for our show. Special happy birthday to Anthony DeMary and to Brenda Murad. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Chris with the Concert Billboard for Tuesday, December 23rd. Tonight, the RZA and Wu-Tang Clan will be at the Hammerstein Ballroom in Manhattan. Mattis Yahoo will be at Webster Hall. And at the Knitting Factory tonight at 7 p.m., the doors open for the Sediment Club, Gavin and Gintis of Consumer Feedback, Acoustic, the Whiskey Crusaders, and No One and the Somebodies. That's all today, December 23rd. And as far as blues go tonight, the Jim Moran Jam will be at DC Riders in Oceanside at 10 p.m. And Don Patrick and Don Salenza Jam will be at Rare Olive in Huntington at 9 p.m. Tomorrow, the 24th, Gail Storm will be at Tequila Jack's in Port Jefferson. And Donnie Salenza will be at Reflections Open Jam at 10 p.m. In Rockville Center. And the Smoke Daddy's Jam at Jesse's Roadhouse in Merrick at 9 p.m. Pamela Betty and Jim Moran will be at the Overtime Sports Bar in Wisconsin at 8:30 p.m. for a blessed and bluesy Christmas Eve. Friday, Mattis Yahoo will be at Webster Hall. And a special WUSB feature on the Long Island Sound Show with Eve will be KC Mojo. That will be from 7 to 8 p.m. right here in the WUSB studio. So tune it to 90.1 to help you digest that huge dinner you know you just shouldn't have eaten. This has been the Concert Billboard with Chris. Please go out and see local music, and please keep it tuned to WUSB Stony Brook.
And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook. It's 4 minutes after 6 o'clock. That means it's time for Off the Wall. And good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And this is our last live show of the year. I don't know what's going to be happening next week. We might do something pre-recorded. We might do something special. But we're not going to be here live. I can tell you that right now. And I can also tell you we're not going to do a clip show because we did that already. And we also have a clip show on the other program, Off the Hook, tomorrow night. Can't do the same thing twice, certainly not in 1 year. So whatever it is that happens, it'll be different. Or maybe it'll just be a music fill-in. I don't know. I don't know yet. Don't know. Heading out of here, heading overseas tomorrow. And, yeah, looking forward to that. Looking forward to getting away, even though it's only for a week or so, seeing some friends over in Holland and in Germany. And if you're one of them, please contact me. Been trouble reaching people sometimes, and the internet has been a real pain in the ass lately. But it'll be fun just to get away from the madness. Oh my god, the madness around with all the crazy shopping frenzy. I don't know what people are talking about when they say that nobody's shopping this year. I was in a mall. I had to be in a mall yesterday. I had no choice. I had to be there. And it was mayhem just trying to park. That first part of the whole process, it's like you're in the Olympics. You're playing some to the death competition, where space opens up and all of a sudden five cars surrounded trying to compete for who can get there first. It's just ugly, you know. I don't want anything to do with it. And then once you get inside, it's more mayhem. People running around screaming. How did it ever turn into this? That's what I'd like to know. How did it ever turn into, whenever this whole momentous occasion was marked, who was the first person to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to start selling things and making lots of money and getting people to basically crowd my store or whatever. It's just somebody had to be the first person to do that. Anyway, it'll all be over soon. In some places, I got my Canadian Dish working the other day. Well, actually, it's always working, but I actually started to watch it a little bit. And I was watching some Canadian TV channels, and they have this whole thing on December 26th. And in fact, a number of countries have this. It's called Boxing Day. It was originally, I believe, meant to be a holiday where the rich people wrapped things up in boxes and gave them to their servants and sent them home, and basically they got to live on leftovers and broken toys or whatever it is they put in those boxes. And it's called Boxing Day. And what they have in Canada, they have Boxing Day sales. Yeah, a whole big thing. December 26th, come in for the Boxing Day sale. I don't understand, in this country where we're all into having sales, I mean, we have Martin Luther King Day sales, for God's sake. Do we have 9/11 sales yet? If we don't, we will. So I don't understand why we haven't just embraced that particular holiday just for the fact that we can have Boxing Day sales. You know, we don't have to know anything about the holiday or its history or anything like that. Just another opportunity. Another opportunity for merchants to get out of a disastrous year. That's all I keep hearing, is how disastrous it is. How it's all falling apart. And yeah, it is. That's not all that surprising either. These things do happen. The important thing, though, the important thing is that you have friends, you have family, you have pets, you have a place to, a place over your head, what's that, a roof, yeah, over your head, you have that, food shouldn't be too hard to get a hold of, although it is for some people, and we should look out for those people. Yeah, I know that flies against the philosophy we've been living under for the last 8 years, but we should take care of our fellow people who can't take care of themselves for whatever reason. That's something just to keep in mind for this time of year. You know, good thoughts like that. As you're struggling in the mall, looking for that perfect gift or whatever. Last show of the year, last live show of the year, and we'll be taking phone calls, reading mail, all that good stuff. And going over some of the more interesting news items of the last week, because there's always something going on. There's always something to talk about. Always somebody to piss off by something that I say, which rubs them the wrong way. When are these people going to realize that I enjoy doing that? I totally enjoy being the person in the crowd that stands up and says the one thing that people don't want to hear. You know, the person who raises that inopportune question or points out something that, although obvious, isn't being alluded to because it detracts from the message. And things like that, you know, being politically incorrect at times or just being kind of falsely naive at other times just to point out some interesting things. I don't know. It's just put me in a crowd of people and at some point the crowd will turn against me. I just that's a guarantee. And I can just come up with so many examples. Conservatives, liberals, Republicans, Democrats, any race, any religion, any lack of race or lack of religion. And I know a lot of other people like that, too. I know a bunch of other people like that. And occasionally I like to get together with them and piss them off somehow. It's fun. So, let's see. Who shall I piss off tonight? There's so many people. I mean, I could try for the usual crowd, or I could try for a new crowd. How about this? Let's look at some of the things that have been happening in light of the incoming administration. We have all sorts of appointments being made and all kinds of decisions. Okay, yeah, this is what I'm going to look at right now. This story here, this is precious. This is, yeah, precious and priceless. It's both. It's a letter that somebody posted. Actually, to be honest, I don't know for sure they actually posted this. Somebody said they posted this. This was, okay, you got to love the internet. I got this on Salon.com. And it's referring to something from the Huffington Post, which is referring to something on change.gov, which is Barack Obama's site for the transition of the new way of life here in the United States. And apparently somebody is really upset. Somebody's really upset at Barack Obama for something he did. In fact, I got to tell you, so many people are wringing their hands in despair because he's not doing everything like they want him to. It just makes me laugh so much to see people do this because it's the typical childish way of behaving. When you don't get your way, you stamp your feet and you throw a tantrum. I mean, who out there in their right mind thought everything was going to be exactly the way they wanted it to be? I maintain nobody really thinks that, but it doesn't stop these people from throwing tantrums anyway when they don't get things exactly their way. And you see this on all different levels. You see this in school. You see this in the workplace. You see this in various activist groups that you might get involved with. All kinds of infighting. This is what keeps people from moving forward. This is what keeps organizations from moving forward. People constantly nitpicking at little tiny details and saying, well, you know, you're not talking in this particular manner, and I insist that you do, otherwise it's disrespectful to me, and et cetera, it just goes on and never stops, and you never actually address any issues. But in this particular case, the issue is an interesting one, and it's something that a number of people have brought up and deserves to be addressed. But let's read the letter. It's addressed to Mr. Obama, and apparently was posted on change.gov. I didn't realize that you could just post various letters on that site. Have to spend some more time on it and look it over. Letter goes like this. Mr. Obama, I am writing to ask that you return the campaign donations made by myself. I'll leave out the names because there's no real point. By myself and my wife to your campaign. We were passionate supporters. My husband volunteered for weeks at a local phone bank. We attended numerous rallies and fundraisers, including one with your wife, Michelle. See attached picture. You can attach pictures to these letters you post? Wow. It's pretty sophisticated. That fundraiser was ostensibly held to court support with the gay community. At that fundraiser, Michelle held my baby and promised to not forget us. Yet you have. Yeah, they forgot you. The millions of people that they had to talk about, they forgot you. Yeah, sure. We worked tirelessly for your campaign, replacing our yard sign when it was vandalized. So why would you betray the gay community that stood by you and ask Rick Warren to lead your inauguration when his anti-gay rhetoric is dangerous to our family? He also was a huge proponent of Proposition 8 that has endangered our family and has eliminated the civil rights of thousands of Californians. We gave thousands of dollars, despite the tough economy, in hopes that our community... They spelled R wrong. They spelled it A-R-E. Huh. That our community would no longer be marginalized. Despite the passage of Proposition 8, we celebrated on Election Day. Today, we feel betrayed. There are so many Christian leaders who are advocates for the gay community. Why choose one who is not? Please return our donations immediately. We made donations over a number of occasions, frequently in response to urgent pleas from your campaign. Consider this an urgent plea as well. Please remove us from your mailing list and never ask us for your support again unless you stand with us and reject homophobia once and for all. Well, this pretty much wraps it all up. This is the attitude I'm talking about, where one thing, one symbolic act, one decision is enough for people to condemn somebody permanently and to make all these demands and simply throw a tantrum. Yeah, you know, this guy, Rick Warren, he's a bit of a jerk. He's a big jerk, in fact. Let me scroll down here. I've got his Wikipedia page open, or the Wikipedia page about him. Let's see what he has to say. Warren has stated that homosexual behavior is not a natural way of life and thus not a human right. We shall not tolerate this aspect at all. That's a quote. He has also stated that gay marriage is not a civil right. In a conversation with atheist author Sam Harris in Newsweek magazine, Warren spoke out against evolution and in favor of creationism and stated that brutal dictators such as Mao, Stalin, and Pol Pot were all atheists when questioned on whether religion is beneficial to society. Didn't say anything about Hitler, did he? Asked about the difference between himself and Focus on the Family founder James Dobson, Warren claimed that it's a matter of tone, meaning they hold essentially the same beliefs, but simply have differing ways of expressing them. Well, yeah, he's a jerk. He's an idiot. He's somebody that probably most people listening to this show completely disagree with on these issues. So why, in God's name, is Barack Obama having this guy at his inauguration? Well, to understand this, you have to look back at Barack Obama's campaign, where he said he was going to reach out to all kinds of people that disagree with him. It doesn't really make much sense to simply be surrounded all the time by people who feel exactly the same way you do. Now, this guy, he has some pretty atrocious views, but they are views. They're opinions. This guy doesn't actually have blood on his hands. You know, he's not somebody who's gone around advocating people be killed or tortured or things like that. And I could say quite a few political leaders do things like that. I'd have more of a problem with that. Much like I would expect to be able to enter into a conversation with somebody who is religious, seeing all the things that I say about religion, the things that I say about religion are probably as bad as what he says about gay marriage and gay lifestyle. I think organized religion is one of the most harmful things that can happen to your brain. I think it's stood in the way of progress. It's led people to hate. It started almost every war imaginable. Yet I feel I can still talk to somebody who is religious, and I still feel that they will welcome that conversation. In that same vein, we have to open the door to people that do not feel the same way. And yeah, inauguration is a big deal, that's for sure. But what better way to do it than to do it in front of everybody? And think about it this way. If Barack Obama is this open-minded that he's willing, and obviously he doesn't agree with this. I mean, this is pretty clear. You cannot treat somebody as if they agree with what somebody that you disagree with says simply because they invite them to an event or speak to them like they're a human being. You can't make that generalization and say, well, because you associate with this person, that makes you just as bad as that person. That is what George W. Bush has been doing the last 8 years, not talking to people, not engaging in conversation. Now, if Barack Obama can do this with this fundamentalist guy, maybe he can also do it with all kinds of world leaders that we have disagreements with, that he has disagreements with. So we might actually see through this philosophy the changing in foreign policy for so many places in the world. And isn't that what we wanted? Or do we just want him to talk to those people that we disagree with that aren't fundamentalists? You know, we just want to talk to the people that are communist leaders, Fidel Castro or Raul Castro or Kim Jong-il, or people like that. Are these the only ones? Or should he open the door to all kinds of people and listen to what they have to say and then reach his conclusions? I've been hearing ever since he started appointing the first person to his cabinet how he's betraying people and he's got this guy in the transportation department that is big into highways and roads and things like that. And, you know, it's just simply it boggles my mind that people actually think that somebody is going to simply put all these people in positions of power that aren't already associated with those particular positions. You know, people are upset that bicycle advocates aren't the ones running the Department of Transportation. I mean, it's unrealistic. And by bicycle advocates, I mean the kind that think cars are evil. You can't have somebody running the Department of Transportation who thinks cars are evil. You just can't. Yes, we should be cutting back on fossil fuels and things like that. We should be burning less oil. These are important issues. But the person that you put in a position is going to have some familiarity, some back and forth with that particular aspect of whatever it is he's doing. And I really would like to know what people expected. What did they expect? They expect, I don't know, Ralph Nader to be in charge of that? You know, it wouldn't have worked. Would have been interesting, but it wouldn't have worked. I think Ralph Nader should be in charge of something, though. I think, put him in charge of some cabinet position having to do with consumer affairs and things like that. I think that is a distinct possibility. Someone of his ilk, if not Ralph himself. This is just something that I've seen many, many times in the past month or so, past couple of months. I'm sure it's going to keep going. The thing is, the guy hasn't even taken power yet. He hasn't even done anything yet. When he actually starts to enact legislation, sign bills, things like that, that's when I'm ready to speak up and say, wow, you really got this wrong. And yes, there will be lots there'll be lots of things to disagree about. Let's put it that way. Lots of things. First on my list, this war in Afghanistan. Now, let's not be surprised when he sends more troops to Afghanistan. He said he was going to do that. He said he was going to do that throughout the campaign. So we can't be all self-righteous and surprised when he does exactly that. I disagree with it. I think it's a stupid war. But the only reason we're even entertaining the notion is because we have an even stupider war going on. So Afghanistan all of a sudden looks like, hey, you know, this might not be so bad simply because we have Iraq to compare it to. But if we didn't have Iraq, then Afghanistan would be a disaster. At some point, it most likely will be. So yeah, plenty of time to disagree, but let's not go nuts here. Do you really think we will ever get somebody in the White House further to the left than Barack Obama in our lifetimes? I don't think so. I do not think so. And I base that on all the Reds. Yeah, I love calling them that because they hate it so much. All of the Reds in this country that voted against Barack Obama. I'm so happy we call them Reds, Red States. Yeah. Because it could have easily gone the other way, and then you have that whole communist thing going. But yeah, because those people are around, because there are so many of them, and there are, and you have to recognize that fact. You can't just pretend they don't exist. Well, as long as that's the case, we're pretty lucky where we are right now, and I just hope it lasts. We don't wind up with another 8 years of... Well, you couldn't possibly wind up with a Bush-like president, could you? But something along those lines. How about a Bush that's competent? That would scare me. That would scare me more. So the important thing now is let's make things work on a local level and hopefully make some change on a national level. It takes time. It takes effort. But the one thing that does hurt it is when people throw up their hands in despair and walk away because things aren't turning out exactly the way they want them to. It never works that way. I mean, do you not talk to your parents because they disagree with you politically? Well, I guess a lot of people don't. I know people who don't talk to their parents because of their political views, and it's the stupidest thing ever. You know? These are people you have lots of points of reference with. And not just your parents, your former friends or classmates or other people that you once had something in common with, that you have things to talk about, but you disagree on certain other issues. You don't give up on people because of the disagreements. In fact, that's more of a reason to talk. As long as you treat the other side with respect, that's really the only condition as far as I can see. All right, that's my little spiel on that. So hopefully I got some people riled up a little bit. I'm sure we'll get letters. Well, the email address, otw@2600.com. Phone number, we'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit, is area code 631-632-9872. 631-632-WUSB. Okay, what else has been going on? What's this? Okay, yeah, the MTA, you know, don't get me started on them. That's the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the people that run the trains and buses. They're saying now that they might be raising the subway and bus fares to $3. That's the worst-case scenario being considered by them. Somehow they got a $1.2 billion shortfall in their budget. I don't know how they did this. One year we're hearing about how more people are riding trains and buses than ever before and how there's actually a surplus. Now there's a shortfall, and all of a sudden we've got to pay more. When there's a surplus, the rates don't go down. They just go up every time there's a shortfall, and then they stay up until the next shortfall. Something ain't right here. The MTA released a list of proposed maximum fares and tolls and a notice providing the schedule for 8 public hearings. Those are going to be contentious, to say the least. And those public hearings will be discussing the planned increases in service cuts. Yeah, service cuts on top of the increases. Now, besides the subway and bus hike from $2 to $3, the MTA is looking at raising the weekly MetroCard from $25 to $32, the 30-day unlimited ride MetroCard from $81 to $105. Now, tolls on MTA operating bridges and tunnels, including the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel and the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge. How many of you know the Triborough Bridge is now called the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge? Yeah. That just happened a couple of weeks ago. You know, a friend of mine from out of town actually raised a very good point. Renaming these things to names of people is bad because people who aren't from the area don't know where they go. You know? I mean, the Brooklyn Bridge, where do you think that goes? The Manhattan Bridge, where do you think that goes? Actually, I have a lot of fun with those two bridges because those same people from out of town, I tell them that the Manhattan Bridge goes to Manhattan and the Brooklyn Bridge goes to Brooklyn, and they're both one-way bridges and you can't go the other direction. And people do believe that. Sorry, I have to have my fun. The Queensboro Bridge, obviously that goes to the borough of Queens. You know, the Midtown Tunnel doesn't go downtown. And the Triborough Bridge goes to 3 different boroughs. Now, the Robert F. Kennedy, nobody's going to know where that goes. We will. People who live here will, but it's going to confuse all sorts of others. But still, it's kind of cool to have new names. Anyway, getting back to those bridges. Yeah, the tolls on those could rise to $7. You know what? I don't have a problem with that. Raise the tolls. The tolls should go up. I do have a problem with tolls on the East River bridges, which currently are free, because when you put toll booths up, you get more traffic. That's the only real issue I have with that. But yeah, you know, discourage people from driving. The MTA, they just keep encouraging people to drive. Listen to this. They want to raise rates on the Long Island Railroad, which serves us out here, and Metro North, which goes north, obviously. Those rates could go up by as much as a third. A third. I mean, do you know how much cheaper it is to drive from here to New York City than it is to take a train? Do you know how much more convenient it is? It shouldn't be, but it is. And the MTA is doing precisely the wrong thing by making it more inconvenient, cutting service, raising prices. And in this time when gas prices are obscenely low, I mean, they really are. I heard on the radio the other day that they might be $1 a gallon soon. I can't remember when they were that low. You simply have more people on the roads, and that's not good for the environment. That's something that we have to figure out a way to reverse that trend and build up the infrastructure and have mass transit so more people can use it and not be inconvenienced. That's really important. All right, so now I've upset the car lobby, I hope. The auto industry? Yeah. Good. Good. Upset bicyclists next. How about that, okay? Bicycles should not be riding in the street. There. Now, you know, here's the thing, okay? When you're a pedestrian in New York City, bicycles are frightening because they keep whizzing past you and you almost get hit by them. And this happens to me all the time. These are people that go through red lights because while the activist bicyclist people, maybe that's not the right word because a lot of activists aren't idiots. The militant bicyclist, how about that? Yeah. They're the ones that say, well, we demand to be treated the same way as cars, but we're not going to obey the traffic lights. Yeah, and if a pedestrian gets in our way, we're just going to blow a whistle at him and intimidate him some more. But they don't only just intimidate pedestrians, they also intimidate cars. And I know that sounds silly, but if you're driving down a street and some idiot is riding a bicycle down the middle of the street, he's endangering himself. He's also making it very hard for you to figure out a way to get around him. I had this happen to me a couple of weeks ago where some jerk was just simply weaving in and out of cars at a fairly high speed, too, but not high enough to compete. And I made the ultimate mistake of when he swerved right in front of me in my smart car. I gave a little beep. You know, it lasted about as long as the word beep I just said. And, of course, that's the ultimate sin. And he went up alongside my car and smashed it with his fist as hard as he possibly could. This is the kind of idiot I'm talking about that gives bicyclists a bad name. And yet, when I mention this to people who are into this kind of thing, they say, well, you know, you're the one who was wrong because you're in a car. Yeah, that makes sense. I've actually had people tell me that cars don't belong in the streets of New York City. Right. You know, it's just... At some point, you have to realize that you're speaking with people that simply are not on the same planet. Now, I'm a bicyclist myself. Whenever I get a chance to, all in favor of these things. I'm in favor of less cars. I'm in favor of more mass transit. But I'm also in favor of some rational thinking here. And lots of times we sort of lose touch with the rational way of thought when we're pursuing our little causes. And we just assume the other side is evil all the time. And that's never good. And cops are a good example of that. That works both ways. Cops assuming that people on the street are evil. People on the street assuming that cops are evil. Happens all the time. The fact of the matter is, cops are human beings. Shouldn't get any special treatment, but also shouldn't be expected to behave in a non-human way. They make mistakes too. But they have to be accountable for those mistakes. I was actually, when I was dodging bicycles and cars on the street the other day, I was a pedestrian. It was an interesting night. This was actually Saturday night, downtown in Manhattan in the Ludlow area. That's where they don't have traffic lights. They have stop signs. It's kind of cool. And I saw this taxi come racing up the street. I think it was coming up Rivington at about maybe 50 miles an hour. And, you know... that's just not safe. You don't do things like that, no matter who you are. This taxi comes racing up to the intersection, and tires squealing, makes a right turn without even stopping at the stop sign. I looked at my friend and I said, you know what? That's not a taxi driver. Taxis do not drive like that. I don't mean to generalize about any group of people, but taxi drivers, as a rule, tend to be good drivers. They have to be. They own their cars. They want to. Their car is their livelihood. And while they may swerve and do things that make you cuss at them, they don't drive down residential streets at 50 miles an hour and blow through stop signs. You know who does do that? Cops. Cops do that all the time. So I said to my friend, "That's a cop. That's not a taxi driver." And we walked up the street where the car had stopped and was talking to some other people, and sure enough, the guy behind the wheel was wearing a uniform. And my friend was like, "How did you do that? How did you know that was a cop?" It's like, you know, it's not that difficult. You just look for driving patterns, driving habits. I've done this with regular cars too. See the way people drive. They're not the smartest people in the world, people who are undercover cops, because they keep thinking that they're above the law. They go up to a traffic light and then they just go right through it. And they're in a plain car, supposedly trying to hide. But obviously, people don't do that. There are only a couple of kinds of vehicles. Actually, there are three kinds of vehicles that go through red lights. Cop cars, sanitation trucks, and New York Post trucks. And it's true. If you don't believe me, go to New York City and watch. And you'll see those are the people that consistently go through red lights. Consistently. Because they're above the law. New York Post. The New York Times does not do that. There are New York Times trucks in the city. They stop at the red lights. They don't go through them. But the New York Post always does. I don't understand it, but it's true. So you simply, you watch these particular habits and you are able to figure out who's behind the wheel. I don't think this happens in other cities. I think New York turns a blind eye to cops running red lights, and I don't think that's right. I've almost been run over by a cop at least once who did not have any kind of flashing lights on, just felt the law was above them. Law isn't above anybody. Everyone should play by the rules in our society. I don't mean going crazy and fining people for jaywalking or nonsense like that. I'm talking about the rules that can hurt people. Breaking the rules can hurt people, that is. All right, so speaking of cops, let's see what's in cops in the news this week. A Suffolk police sergeant was within department guidelines when he used a stun gun on a man who drove past a police barricade during an accident investigation. That's according to a department spokesman yesterday. Inspector Joseph Blattler, the Suffolk 2nd Precinct Commander, determined that there was no violation of rules and procedures. Brentwood resident Barry Thill, 62 years old, a U.S. Postal Service employee, was hit with a stun gun on Friday after barging through flares and traffic cones at a fatal accident site on the Long Island Expressway South Service Road in Commack. Thill, who was later found to be suffering from bleeding on the brain, disregarded repeated warnings to stop, then refused to get out of his car, police said. Officers broke his car window and shot him with a taser before they wrestled him to the ground and handcuffed him. He was charged with resisting arrest, obstructing governmental administration, and three traffic violations. He was then taken to Huntington Hospital, where doctors discovered that he had a cerebral hemorrhage, which accounted for the way he was behaving. Now, there are a number of things wrong with this story here. First of all, a number of people are speaking up for the guy, saying that he's the most peaceful guy in the world and should not have been treated this way. Okay, you know, the way this story is written makes it seem like this guy is really looking for trouble, barging through flares, ignoring repeated warnings, and making it seem like the cops had no choice. Of course they had a choice. Obviously, the car was stopped. They don't have to shoot the guy with a taser because he's not getting out of his car. Does that make any sense? There's all kinds of reasons why somebody doesn't get out of their car or why somebody might be acting irrationally. This is something that cops don't seem to realize. A few weeks ago, they killed a naked guy on his fire escape because he wouldn't do what they were telling him to do. So they shot him with something and he fell off the fire escape and was killed. This is not the way to handle people who are behaving irrationally. There's all kinds of reasons why people behave irrationally. It's not always their fault. This is something that they simply are not trained to understand, and that's a very big mistake. The other thing, the other problem I have with this story, they give the guy's address and age and everything. The poor guy who suffered the cerebral hemorrhage didn't hurt anybody except himself. They don't identify the cop. Why? Why do they always protect? They always protect cops no matter what, you know. He was exonerated, fine, but still, we don't get to know who he is. Would we get treated this way? I don't think so. They're not superhumans. Here's another case. You might have heard about this yesterday. Lillo Brancato, the former Sopranos actor, accused of a drug-related burglary and the murder of an off-duty police officer in the Bronx, was found not guilty of both charges on Monday. His acquittals came on the same day as a mistrial was called of a suspect in the murder of another New York Police Department officer. But you know what? That's got nothing to do with the story. That's just simply inserted in there for sympathy. Make it seem like the cops are being victimized by the courts. City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly said it was a day of disappointments in court. Brancato was convicted of a lesser charge of attempted burglary that carries a maximum of 15 years in prison. Now, basically, here's the story here. This guy, he had been on The Sopranos, was a minor player in that particular show. He had descended into a sordid life of drugs and crime. Despite a career-making break, when Robert De Niro chose the actor to play his son in The Bronx Tale. Now, in the 2005 death of Officer Daniel Anchategui. All right, I'm sorry, I'm probably mispronouncing that. Prosecutors said Brancato and an accomplice, Stephen Armento, broke into a basement apartment to steal prescription drugs after a night of drinking at a strip club. Anchategui, who lived next door, came out to investigate after he heard a window break. Armento shot the officer with his .357 Magnum, hitting him in the heart. The dying officer fired back, wounding both men. Now, Armento was convicted early this year of first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison without parole. Now, this seems pretty straightforward. The guy who shot the cop is sentenced for his murder. Now, what these people want, meaning all the cops that were filling the courtroom, they want the other guy to also be charged with murder, even though he didn't even have a gun on him, and he claims that he didn't know the other guy had a gun on him. But I've been reading all kinds of comments about this, saying, well, if you're involved in any incident in which a cop gets killed, then you're guilty of killing that cop. It doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't work the other way. If a cop shoots somebody, and God forbid, he actually gets called to account for it, does every cop that was on the scene also get charged with the crime that the cop eventually gets charged with? No, it doesn't work that way. You charge the person who committed the deed. And this guy was involved in robbing an apartment. Then that's what he should get charged with, and that's what he was charged with. Makes perfect sense, but if you look at the responses to this, people are really angry that this guy got away with murder. He didn't get away with murder. He's not the guy who did it. The guy who did it has been charged with murder and is serving time, as he should. Just weird how people distort what's going on sometimes. All right, I'm giving out the phone number, 631-632-9872. We only have a few minutes, as always, so I'd like to see a bunch of calls come in so we don't just get the same voices. And there's a machine making a horrible grinding noise somewhere. So if we get a handful of calls, I'll go into delay. We'll take some phone calls. If you call and it times out and you get a little fast busy, call right back. Call right back. That way we have a number of you we can talk to. 631-632-9872. And while we're waiting for those calls to come in, let's take a look at some mail. Peter says, I'm looking forward to seeing you at CCC this year. Are you planning to have any meetups while at the conference in Berlin? Well, I think I'm just going to be hanging out pretty much in the city at the conference. So if you're at the CCC conference, details at ccc.de, by all means, say hi and have a great time, because Germany this time of year, it's a ton of fun, and try to get there every year. Here's another listener. Alan says, I was just listening to the show for December 9th, and this American from New York will be at CCC. I think it's my fourth time for CCC. I also attended What the Hack and All the Hopes since H2K2. That's great. The more Americans that get over there, the better, you know? Open up your eyes, see something different. It's a good time of year to go. All right, we have one call coming in. We need more than that. I know people on the internet probably are just getting to the point of hearing me ask for phone calls the first time. So 631-632-9872. Let's get a couple more, and then we'll go to the phones. This is a letter actually addressed to the caller of the December 2nd Off the Wall episode on immigration. Your statement about illegals stealing jobs is utterly flawed. America is built and founded by international invaders, from the pilgrims to the Hispanics. The thing they have in common is that they are fleeing some sort of injustice, be it economic, political, or religious. As for your concern on jobs and stealing, it is a fact that illegals work for substandard pay, and often live in substandard conditions. Naturally, companies will use this to their advantage as a means to increase profit. However, this is an injustice to the immigrant to do the same work for less pay. The loss of jobs is only a side effect of the social injustice. The solution is to naturalize all immigrants so that they pay taxes and have equal rights and responsibilities to all. To refuse social acceptance is a denial of their right to pursue happiness, and that right is the foundation of all the rights in which this country was built. Note that I say, sadly, few people still understand the founding principles of our forefathers. Having been given this right, they have lost the understanding of its importance. The Bill of Rights is worthless if it's applied only to Americans. America is just the place in which these rights should be protected. Someone in all Americans' family tree once understood this truth. Signed, Alicia. Thanks for that letter. And you know, I think we had one call replaced with another. I'm serious here, folks. I'm serious. Apologies to the person calling in, but we need more than one person calling in because, you know, what if you're a lousy caller? Then we go to delay, and then we have to listen to something you say, and we have to move on to the next call. Except there isn't a next call, and then it's embarrassing and awkward for everybody. Yeah. So I don't know who that little flashing red dot is, but we need two more flashing red dots for me to actually go into delay and start taking phone calls. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. We have plenty of letters, though. We can fill the time with letters. Dear Emmanuel, I loved last week's show, and actually this was a couple of shows ago. Your discussion of the recent Suffolk hate crimes was everything the mainstream media isn't, which is to say balanced and rational. By discussing several viewpoints, you made Steve Levy look like the bigot he is, and Steve Levy being our county executive, not the guy who did the keynote for the last Hope conference. So let's make that clear right now. That's one of the many reasons I'll continue listening to Off the Hook and Off the Wall. One criticism I have of your comments, saying that illegal immigrants cut our grass, repair our homes, deliver our food, etc., which, of course, are jobs often held by people born elsewhere who come here to work, that statement implies that because they're immigrants whose immigration status is not in line with some arbitrary set of laws, they aren't capable of much more. It's definitely not what I meant, but I could see how it might be interpreted that way. You don't think that there are Mexican hackers or Salvadorian internet entrepreneurs? These people are as capable as any, and the fact that they will take such a wide range of difficult and demanding jobs, i.e. the ones that your average white American thinks himself too good for, is patronizing and subtly derided in our society, even by those who support their right to make a living. Yeah, the thing is, you know, of course, they're capable of all kinds of amazing things, but to keep a low profile in this environment where everyone's watching for the illegal people, and certainly only the illegal people of certain racial backgrounds. I don't see much about illegal Chinese immigrants. I don't ever see that being raised as a major problem. You know, it seems to be Hispanic more than anything. So yeah, you know, even Hispanic citizens of this country have to keep a low profile because of that attitude. And it's sickening. Anyway, I share this criticism because unlike the O'Reilly and Dobbs types who are the face and attitude of mainstream discussion, you are open to reasoned argument and welcoming of different perspectives. Keep up the excellent show. Signed, you know, I don't know how to say your name, -3 Paul. Yeah, -3 Paul. Okay, well, that's your name. I'm not going to make fun of it or anything like that, but thanks for your letter. Now we have no calls. All right, you know what? Fine. All right, one call came back. How hard is it? Is our phone line incapable of accepting more than one call at a time? Don't think it's much to ask. We're not asking for money. Do you think we're asking for money? Okay, there's two calls. You know what? I'm going to go into delay. But if any of those calls disappear in the time when I go into delay, then I'm going to go right back and go back live. All right. Hopefully I won't mess this up again. We're going into delay now. We'll see you in a second.
This is Kate from the B-52s, and when I come to Stony Brook, I tune in to WUSB, known as WUSB 90.1 FM.
And here we are in delay. Our number is 631-632-9872, and we are taking phone calls. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hello?
Hi. Speak up, please. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead. Speak up.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you? Where are you calling from?
Brookhaven.
Okay, the actual village of Brookhaven or the town of Brookhaven?
Hold on, I'm sorry.
Well, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, turn on your radio, get very confused.
Okay. My question was kind of off topic, but what is your opinion on Carolyn Kennedy for the Senate?
Well, you know,
like, you know,
It's kind of frustrating because here we have somebody who's going to be appointed as senator. We're not going to vote for them. Appointed by a governor that we also didn't vote for. So no matter who gets selected, it's not like we have any say in it. So I guess the only thing we can do is voice our opinions in forums like this. I mean, she seems like somebody who could do the job, but she doesn't really have any background in politics. Maybe that's a good thing.
Thing is, she has less experience than Palin.
That is true, but I think she knows that Africa's a continent, and I don't think she's claiming she can see Russia from her house or whatever. But yeah, it's. Do you have somebody that you think would be more qualified? I think Andrew Cuomo might be a better candidate.
You know, I think you'd be more qualified. Really,
Don't even wish that on me. I spend my time talking about this thing. I cannot even imagine what it must be like to actually be one of those people.
What I'm thinking of is, like, it's just like, you know, we've had Bushes and Clintons and Kennedys and blah, blah, blah.
I know.
It's almost a monarchy now.
It's like a monarchy. It really is. We need some new faces, some new names. I totally agree with that. So that is the biggest thing against her. It's not really her fault. But then again, she's not trying to distance herself from her last name. So I don't think that's enough. If that's her biggest qualification, then it's definitely not enough.
And yeah, so that was my call. That was it.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for that question.
Hey, cheers.
All right. And look at that. All the calls disappeared. You see, this is what I was worried. What if that was a lousy call? That could have been a horrible call. And then we would have been stuck. Yeah, we would have been stuck. And there would have been nothing we could have done afterwards except talk about various other things. But fortunately, I always have a stockpile of. Do I have enough time? Okay, I'm going to read one more letter, and then we'll get out of here, because let me go back live. I'm going to do that. What a big waste of time that was. Not the call. The call was great, but all this trouble going into delay. Hang on. Hurry up. All right, here I am. I'm live now. Okay, here's another letter. I listen to Off the Wall as often as I can because I normally find the show insightful and entertaining, but I felt your commentary on the F-18 crash in San Diego was quite misguided. In particular, you asked rhetorically what the fighter was doing flying over a populated neighborhood and why the military doesn't train over water or other unpopulated areas. I'm not a pilot, but I'll do my best to provide you with the answers as I see them. The truth is that the military does train pilots over water and other unpopulated areas. By FAA and military rules, pilots, especially fighter and acrobatic pilots, cannot perform maneuvers within a certain distance of an airport because doing so would pose a hazard to take off or approach traffic. Since every city and other densely populated region has at least one airport, the only other option for them is to practice out in the middle of nowhere, that is, over water, mountains, or desert. The pilot in this incident had come back from a training mission on an aircraft carrier, meaning he was practicing over water and had to fly over the neighborhood in order to reach the runway. According to the articles that I read, when he came in on approach, his plane lost all power and he was forced to bail. Now, sometimes pilots stay on board a doomed aircraft in an attempt to steer it into a field or body of water, but unlike conventional airplanes, a fighter jet is completely uncontrollable when it loses power at low speed and at low altitude. Even when you figure in military activities and general aviation, flying is still statistically much safer than hopping in the car and driving somewhere. I guess it's only human nature to lay blame on something, even the wrong thing, when a tragedy like this happens. Signed, Charles. Well, Charles, you bring up some good points, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of seeing all kinds of fighter jets, and I've hung out in various places where there are military bases nearby. They're doing all kinds of, like, loop-de-loops and things in the sky above houses, and, yeah, you know, it's fine when everything is safe, but as soon as there's a problem and the people below are the victims of the problem, that's when you got to start asking some questions, and it might not even apply to this particular case. Maybe everything was done. Maybe it was all done properly, but you got to steer that kind of thing away from populated areas whenever possible. And if that's not being done aggressively, then it is inconsiderate to the people. I don't think I could be as forgiving as the husband who came home to find that his entire family had been killed by this airplane that crashed into his house while he was at work. Don't think I could be as forgiving as that guy was, who said, let's pray for the pilot who was able to walk away. But just another aspect of life here in 21st century America. Well, you know what? That's going to just about do it for us here tonight. And yes, this is the last live show of the year. Not sure what's going to be on next week, but I would like people to just try to think a little bit about the things we've talked about tonight, about the togetherness, about being able to reach out to each other and communicate. Look for the similarities and try and take care of the people around you, and just maybe use this time of year to I don't know, to sort of have more of a brotherhood type of a feeling, you know, where we're all in this together and let's try and all make it out together, that kind of a thing. I'm going to do something I don't normally do. In fact, I don't think I've ever done this before, but sometimes religious perspectives are the best at expressing this kind of thing. And I heard something the other day that was just so moving that I wanted you to participate in it as well, to share this and maybe rethink some of the strong opinions that we have about organized religion. You see, I'm willing to do this too. I'm willing to always question my own beliefs and figure that maybe there is more out there than what we give it credit for. In any event, this one time of the year, let us open our hearts a little bit more and our minds. All right. I'll see you next year and maybe next week in some form. It's Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Now, let's close with this thought.
In these troubled times, when problems like political corruption, unemployment, mental illness, racial strife, and the breakup of the family seem to be ever on the increase, when one war is no sooner ended than another begins in some other part of the globe, when sometimes we get up in the morning and feel that we look out on a sea of hate which threatens to engulf everything worth saving in this tired old world of ours, in times like these, it is more important than ever that we prepare a place in our hearts where the peace and loving kindness of our Savior can enter in. Love thy neighbor, Jesus said. And we know that he meant by that not just the fellow who lives literally next door to you, but all our neighbors all around the world, whether they're black, white, or yellow, rich or poor, male or female, old or young, long hair or short hair. For how are we going to achieve the happiness and prosperity we're all striving for if we turn against one another with hate instead of love in our hearts? If we are going to preserve any hope for lasting peace in the world, we must learn to live in harmony with all races, colors, and creeds, whether Catholic, Protestant, Baptist, Communist, Atheist, Hindu, all except the Jews. Because, let's face it, the Jews killed Christ. They killed him just the same as if they had murdered him, and we can never forgive them for it. And now, thanking you for listening, this is the Reverend Otto A. Brown saying, God bless you, and good night.
Well, and that sounds like the first faux pas by future Senator Emmanuel Goldstein. Beautiful piece, and along the same lines. My name is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution, and this is the USB Stony Book.